Thanks, everyone. Let me start off by saying this is not going to be a particularly academic paper. It's more by way of some nostalgia, some self-congratulation, and an appeal for your ongoing support and ideas to take us forward into the next 10 years. So Amanda's going to start.
So we'll just start off with a bit of, I know most of you are probably familiar to some extent with Paradisiac, but maybe some of you less so than others. So we'll just start with a bit of an introduction to where we've come from before we talk about where we're at now and where we're going. So what is Paradisiac? It was established in 2003 as a cross-institutional collaborative research facility to preserve and make accessible Australian researchers' records of endangered languages and cultures of the Asia-Pacific region. The partners were originally Sydney University, Melbourne University and the Australian National University, and then in 2005 the University of New England also became a partner for a period of time. The set-up funding came from the Australian Research Council, from a Linkage Infrastructure Equipment and Facilities Scheme, or a LEAF grant, and there have been a few more of those since, but that hasn't been a constant source of funding. That was how it began in 2003. So the rationale for setting up Paradisiac in the first place was to address the large, and Kevin Bradley's kind of foreshadowed quite a lot of what I might introduce here, but to address the issue of the large number of endangered regional languages. So by regional we mean the large area around Australia, not just Australia. So Kevin mentioned particularly the Pacific, but also Asia and Australia's region in general. And not just that there are a large number of languages that were endangered, but also that the material, that the media that these languages had been recorded on was in itself endangered. So we had a large number of recordings sitting in less than optimal conditions in various places, often with high humidity or in a filing cabinet somewhere that no one had opened for years, that actually contained really important recordings. And the equipment for listening to those recordings was, if not already obsolete, then quickly becoming so. And so Paradisiac aimed to take those recordings, to digitise them and to provide access to them in ongoing safe storage through the archive. As Kevin mentioned, there was also the issue that there wasn't currently a suitable repository for these recordings. While there were IATSIS, for example, for Australian language recordings, the recordings of Australian researchers, not Australian material, so the material from Australia's region, had no chief repository to put them in. So that was the rationale for creating a place for safe storage for those recordings. We thought we'd slip in an old slide from 2004 to kind of remember where we were then and see what's happened since then. So in 2004, in a presentation, Linda talked about one of the goals of Paradisiac that was to find ongoing program funding. Yeah. There's a cross next to that one. We'll come back to that. And a second goal was to develop Paradisiac as a national research facility, something that has definitely become reality. And then a bunch of technical developments. So we wanted not just to digitise old recordings, as I was just talking about, but also to be able to ingest born digital audio media. So to encourage, not just to get those recordings, but to encourage researchers to be recording direct to digital, high quality digital media, and to be able to ingest those into the archive.
It's worth noting that two of those born digital media formats are pretty much completely obsolete now, Minidisc and DAT. When we first started, everybody was saying, but I am recording digital, I'm recording on Minidisc. That was a big issue for us.
Yeah, and having great trouble finding DAT machines that we could transfer from. We wanted to develop participant entry of metadata and annotations so that information could be captured at the time of recordings being deposited. We wanted web-based audio delivery tool to allow access via transcripts, and trial linkage between images of field notes and relevant audio, which has definitely been trialled to some extent. That's something we could perhaps do more of still. And we wanted to decide what to do about video, digital video. Again, something that is ongoing. So now, jumping forward to now, our collection now, this is a snapshot from the Nabu catalogue, that is the new Paraday Set catalogue. It has lovely maps where you can see where the actual collections are coming from, and you can see the numbers in the circles indicate how many collections are actually in those places. Not that it's terribly precise in this resolution, but as you can see, there's a big cluster around Australia that's hidden entirely by circles there. And there are currently 748 languages represented in the archive. A lot of the outlying dots there are larger collections that might have a few recordings from Africa, or there are also some substantial collections from North America. The Open Language Archives community also gives summary statistics of what's contained in the Paradisic archive, so you can see there the number of languages and some other detail about what's contained within our record. So we've currently got 8,000, just over 8,000 actual resources, which will include not just audio, but we also have a number of image files and some video, although a lot more in the queue that needs to get into the archive somehow, and we need a huge amount of storage to...
I think they're actually items.
So there could actually be a number of files under a single item. So one item might have 20 images and 3 recordings or something.
Yeah, thanks for that.
So there are, of course, a number of related archiving projects for our region. I already mentioned IATSIS. Many of the others listed there deal with similar materials, so a lot of other Pacific materials as well. And we also have links to a range of regional and international organisations doing similar archiving work in Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, throughout the Pacific and Asia. There's an image in particular of one of the depositors from Rapa Nui, Tote Tupano, who brought over some very precious tapes, and we are giving him back CD copies that he can take back with him when he took them back, and he took back the original recordings as well. So we really just digitise the materials and keep the digital record, but not the actual physical tapes in Paradiso. Now, Linda, did you want to talk about
that? Yeah, so just to give a bit of a flavour of some of what we have here, this is a tape that I've stolen from one of Nick's recent presentations, so any errors are entirely Nick's. so we actually have a wonderful collection of material from Stephen Vaughan, including we've digitised lots and lots of his field notes specifically from Solomon's, and we prioritised, because there were researchers who were particularly interested in his materials from especially Reef Santa Cruz, we actually prioritised digitising those parts of that massive collection. There's still an awful lot to go, and Julia Miller can tell you all about how much more we haven't done, but it is a very significant proportion of our collection. We've got Arthur Capel, who was a linguist at the University of Sydney, was one of these people who collected stuff from all over the place, and so we have a massive amount of paper material. The actual manuscripts are archived at the National Library, but we imaged all the relevant documents, and we've coded them for language, so that people, the idea is that if you go and consult the collection at the National Library, you may or may not be able to be aware of what the languages are. So we're going down to a much finer level of granularity than you'll typically see in a major archive. But hopefully that is very useful, not only to researchers, but also to speakers of those languages. The largest collection that we processed in the early years was from Tom Dutton, 295 PNG tapes. We did those. That was one of the early collections that we did. We'll see a picture soon of Amanda with all the CDs that we sent back to ANU. About 90 cassettes in Foy from Jimmy Winer collection. Ted Schwartz has recently been in the process of archiving the Manus Island recordings. I'm not sure how far through we are with organising that data. I know there's an awful lot of it.
Well, and the interesting thing there is that he did field work with Margaret Mead. Mm. So we have these recordings of an anthropologist working with Margaret Mead, and she's in Paradisiac. He's from North America, but there isn't a repository that he could use in North America, so he's working in Paradisiac.
And then Cathy Falk, who's in music here at the University of Melbourne, has a wonderful collection of Sundanese music. She's also, that she's archived with us, she's also done a lot of work with Hmong refugees in Australia. Still on the music side, David Goldsworthy, who was formerly at UNE, has a lot of Indonesian and Fijian music recordings. So you can see we're actually a multidisciplinary archive, even though the majority of the material is linguistic. Even in the language recordings, there's very often music. So we try and take a multidisciplinary approach to our collection. Here is our repository metrics from 2004, which was the earliest report I could find. So we actually got our operating equipment that was bought in 2003 up and running in about July 2003. And so by the 26th of February, we already had 14 collections in there, 447 audio hours. Partly that was because we'd done some previous trial work before we actually got the funding, so we ingested that material as part of our first batch of things. But you can see that I've got a little graph of the collections, which went from 14 in 2004 to 253 now. And one of the things that's really notable is how quickly our collections have been growing in recent years, and that's because we've been getting a lot of digital collections being submitted, especially by younger researchers who are creating born digital recordings. So we're very proud of that record because, as we'll come back to a bit later, we have a lovely steady increase in all our key metrics there. 56,000 files, 6.83 terabytes of the collection, 3,960 hours of audio, that doesn't count the video, and it doesn't count the MP3s, which are the double, which we have all our WAV files are copied to MP3 for access purposes. 253 collections, as I said, and we have 9,556 items in the collection right now. I'm just about to hand back over to Amanda again, but I thought before I did, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to all the chief investigators who've supported us in getting the funding and also in contributing their collections and generally supporting us. I know that some of them are here in the room, so I would like to ask them to stand up. Nick Teeberger is here. Collections. Stephen Bird is hiding down the back there. Thank you, Stephen. I'm not sure who else is here. Has anybody else on this list come along, grown a beard?
Michael Walsh.
Yes! You must have a beard. I'm not sure if there are too many others. Anybody else here on the list? Anyway, these are our wonderful academic supporters and champions.
And this is, these people are what made us happen in the first place, and that's what's kept us going. So thank you so much to all of them. And I might just say that we should also very much thank our institutions. The University of Sydney, ANU, and University of Melbourne in particular have dedicated a lot of resources and infrastructure to supporting us. We actually have data from 49 different universities, quite a few international in our collection. But a big congratulations to our institutions for supporting us to do what we do. Okay, over to Amanda.
So this is the CD collection measured in linguistics hallway length that we returned. So that one of the earliest collections we digitised, and lots of linguistics students peeking at it from the doors. So I've been working with Paradisic since 2003. Let's skip over that one. So just to give you a quick rundown on the staff that have worked with Paradisic, lots of us have been working part-time while doing lots of other things, and many of the staff are also depositors to the collection. So Frank Davey was our audio operator until 2006. Miriam Corris, who also has a collection in the Paradisic archive, worked with us in 2005 and 2006. Aidan Wilson, who grew a beard as well, up the back there, who also has a collection, was working in particular 2007 to 2010, and is still doing some ongoing projects with Paradisic. Nick Fowler-Gilmore is our current audio operator, so he is doing all the digitisation work in Sydney at the moment.
He came to us from IATSIS. And I've got to say that his skills are very rare. Like, because we have the Quadriga audio archiving system, there are probably, Kevin would know how many people there must be in Australia, there's probably about 20 people all up who would actually have the skills to work with the equipment that we have. We're digitising to international archival standards. We've had wonderful support from Kevin and his team at the National Library. The same system is used there and at IATSIS and at the National Film Archive and the National Archives and the War Memorial, and I'm not sure where else, but so we're in very, very wonderful, supportive company there, and we really treasure our staff, and we're very keen not to lose access to these skills, because it would take us a long, long time to train somebody else up to do what Nick's doing for us.
Tom Honeyman.
Playing Scrabble while swimming.
Done a lot of the systems development work and various projects. And then we have a number of other staff, also many of whom are depositors into the Paradisic Archive, who've worked for us over the years as well. Whose names I won't read out. Oh, and so that was just Sydney. At ANU, we also have Julia Miller, who's here today. And
we didn't have a chance to get names of other people.
Other ANU.
Who might have been on the staff, things, Julia. So
yeah.
Anyone else we should mention?
Well, Tom, he's at ANU, he's been helping me out a bit, and Nick Evans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's been pretty quiet there as far as people have been.
And then some of the Melbourne staff who may also be here today, or definitely Lauren and Aidan are here, and I'm not sure about others. Another thing that Paradisic has been a bit of a hub for, and that's been an ongoing aim of Paradisic, is the development of software that will develop tools that are useful in recording in the field and interacting between the field and the archive. So some of those tools are listed here. The most recently, perhaps, is the NABU archival management software, which is the catalogue that we've recently developed. And I don't know if you want to say anything in particular, or Nick might want to say anything about some of the other tools.
Yeah, well, I guess we've also hosted hosted other projects, like the Wunderkammer was one of the very early software things for getting electronic dictionaries onto mobile phones. So this was, well, very early, 2007 or something, very ancient like that. So that was James McElvenny and Aidan who did that one, and so Paradisec provided the infrastructure and support to that was funded partly by a charitable donation from the Hoffman Foundation. So we've been pretty busy. This is the fourth Paradisec conference. So our first year we kicked off with researchers, communities, institutions and sound recordings in 2003. That was a fabulous conference held at the University of Sydney. We had, this was just when we were in very, very early days, and there was a lot of energy and wonderful ideas, and that's where we made a lot of connections that have helped us to develop the way that we have. And then 2006, also at the University of Sydney, we had Sustainable Data from Digital Fieldwork Conference. I know that some people here contributed to that. So we worked with Sydney University Press and the Sydney eScholarship Repository at the University of Sydney Library to make all the proceedings from our conferences available by open access. So have a little look, browse at the University of Sydney Library. You'll see we've got a lot of other material there under the Paradisec publication collection. This is the second conference here at the University of Melbourne. So Nick convened a Sustainable Data from Digital Research in 2011. And we just felt that we couldn't let 2013 go by without having our 10th anniversary, because I reckon that 10 web years must be, I don't know, 1,000 normal years, something like that. Look, we've done so much other stuff. I was putting all this stuff together and thought, it'll take too long. But Nick, in particular, has been fantastic at running training workshops. We're partners in the Resource Network for Linguistic Diversity, so there's all of that stuff that goes on that we're involved in, especially Nick. Plenty of publications here, there and everywhere from Paradisec CIs, especially Nick and I guess we've sort of, you know, presented a lot of conferences and so on, try and get the word out there. Good e-citizenship in the e-humanities. So Kevin mentioned we were involved in the Australian Partnership for Sustainable Repositories, which was a very early e-humanities type. Was around preservation issues in Australian higher education, especially digital preservation. And now we're involved, we've continued to be involved in that kind of stuff. We're involved with the two NECTAR virtual laboratories. NECTAR is an Australian government-funded, I always forget what this one stands for, but somebody here might be able to help me. It's National E-Collaboration Tools.
National E-Research Collaboration Tools and Resources.
Thank you very much. Nearly got there. So there are two virtual laboratories in the humanities, which are kind of, it's an environment for different humanities digital projects to interact. So one of them is called HCSV Lab, and the other one is called Honey, and we're involved with both of those. They're in development still at the moment. And we've also been involved with various international efforts, like the setting up of Delamar. We were one of the foundation members there. The Research Data Alliance Working Group we'll be talking about a bit later today. We've generally tried to make all the connections that we need to make to keep going. Kevin's already mentioned the UNESCO Memory of the World Australian Register, which we were, I don't know how many of you saw, but we were actually featured on ABC TV for that one, which was a bit, we thought was a, especially liked Nick Evans's appeal for people, somebody with billions to come and fund us. but we've also had various other scores along the way. Now, I'm going to move on to the funding story, which is, as you can see, very up and down. And at the moment, unfortunately, it's very down. We did have a LEAF application in this year, which unfortunately didn't get funded, so we're really not sure what we're going to do in 2014. As you'll see, we've had the years with the big spikes in the red, which is funding, is from the ARC LEAF. You can see that we've had sort of varying numbers of people on the ground. So Nick has done these figures. I'm not quite sure what the basis was for them, but you'll see that we had under half an FTE of people for a significant period, and yet we still managed to keep building our collections and doing all this good stuff. So these are the four LEAF grants that we had. So ARC, the Australian Research Council, for those people international, is a national federal government funding body, and the Linkage Infrastructure Equipment and Facilities Scheme is meant to encourage collaboration between universities. So it was really the logical place for Paradisec to be funded because we are a cross-institutional collaboration. The universities had to, as part of the funding model for that, the universities have to put in a substantial amount of cash. And so there's always, when we're putting a LEAF application in, there's always a lot of ringing around and trying to gee up our chief investigators in the different institutions to tell the right stories to their heads of school and their deans and their vice chancellors so that they'll release some money for us. In addition to the salaries of the chief investigators and managers and the time that they've put in, we've also had wonderful infrastructure support. I want to especially thank the University of Sydney ICT. They have been fantastic in helping us through a bad patch that we had last year with our repository at ANU falling over, and they've really, really been wonderful. How have we managed to keep going? Well, we've had other support from various e-research grants, so GrangeNet, which was a very early experimental high bandwidth network between Australian higher education institutions, liked what we were doing so much that they gave us some extra money for a couple of years, which was fantastic, and that really enabled us to get a lot of our early development bedded down. The Australian Partnership for Sustainable Repositories also supported us to do some activities, and we've had support from other areas like that. We've also had ARC project grants, so we're appealing to any of our chief investigators who are applying for grants to please write in money for management of your data into your applications, because that's what we're that's basically how we've managed to keep going. And we've also had support from various charitable donors and the Vaughan Bequest at ANU. We've also done quite a lot of external jobs to keep our audio people busy when we didn't have the funding to pay them internally. So we've been digitising the oral history collection at the State Library of New South Wales, and we've done some digitising job for various land councils and so on. And we have tax deductible gift status, thanks to Nick. We haven't really had the We haven't had the time, I guess, to really get a good fundraising campaign going, which I think we're going to have to work on. So we're still open for business, as our Prime Minister says. We can still digitise audio recordings if we have a current grant, but we much prefer you to give us already digitised material, which most people are creating these days anyway, for newer research. We don't have staff to do a lot of work. We rely on our contributors to put in their own metadata. We'll check it, we'll make sure that it conforms to standards and so on. So we really hope that all of you who are our depositors will continue to support us in those ways. But the shoestring on which we have existed is getting frayed. It's getting very frayed. So we need your ideas. I think there's, we've done so much good stuff, we've still got the enthusiasm of people like yourselves. We're still filling a really important gap in the research data management landscape. I'm very much hopeful that we will be able to keep going in for the next 10 years. But whatever happens, I know that our collection will be looked after properly because we've built it in such a way that it can be maintained by either our institutions or perhaps even one of our national cultural institutions might take it over if the worst comes to the worst and the shoestring snaps. So we need your ideas, people. Please, come and talk to us, and hopefully you're all buzzing with ideas right now. You know a millionaire, billionaire? Okay, that's it. Thank you very much.
And we have plenty of time to test Linda's assertion that the room is abuzz with ideas. Let's go ahead.
The main thing is that we need to keep the audio archiving, even when we're getting digital stuff in, we still need to put it through our audio archiving system. So that means we need the staff money. Although we do have support from our, as you'll know, because we're cross-institutional, we have the main archiving processing has been done at Sydney, but on behalf of other institutions. It's quite hard to get the leverage with the other institutions in the absence of a nice big chunk of funding to give us the funding for that. So really it's come down to the University of Sydney kind of grudgingly kind of eking out the staff funding money. I mean, we've managed to put it together so far, but that's the main kind of operational problem. And of course the LEAF scheme is really, it allows for staff, but it's really meant to be for equipment. So, and that's the way that all the managers think about it, even though the rules of it clearly say that it's actually for funding staff is the difficult thing. And going to the University of Sydney and saying, hey, we want you to fund somebody to work on collections from everywhere, from all your competitors, is actually, we don't say it to them like that.
And it's complicated by the fact that the current research infrastructure funding, the LEAF funding and the Empress funding, specifically ruled out digitisation or stuff associated with digitisation.
Yeah.
Now that's going to be fixed, I think, in the next round.
Yay!
But that's, I don't know, 15 budget maybe.
So I guess, I think we'll limp along for another couple of years, but we've got to hope that we can build some partnerships with the other institutions. And in fact, our own institution, University of Sydney, has massive collections of material that actually needs digitising. They have all these oral histories of the university that are all on the set. So there's actually a much broader need for the generic services, quite apart from the value of the sort of, the specific culturally relevant content that we deal with. So, sorry to put a bit of a dampener on the beginning of the conference, but we thought it was important for you to know where things are at this point. And so, any other ideas?
It's not necessarily an idea. Well, I suppose it is an idea. I mean, what Andrew has said and what you've been saying brings out the fact that, at least in this country, the data underpinnings of digital humanities have been seriously neglected and nobody has wanted to address that question. I think the Digital Humanities Conference in Perth next year is something that really needs to be raised and we need to be pressure on somebody.
There is a useful shift. So I'm Andrew Schwartz from the Australian National Data Service. I'm not part of this community, I'm on the fringes. There is a useful shift, which is the government has recognised the data is infrastructure. This is a clear instance of data as infrastructure. So I think that's what it is.
Okay, well, we'll keep our ear to the ground on that one. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Keep listening to yourself.
But, I mean, I think it's just, you know, please, if any of you have sympathetic ear with your institutions, please, you know, try and get this situation across to them. Because it's up and down and always will be with project funding, basically. So we have to keep trying, but, you know, because we are a collaboration, we've got to make sure that our partners are in the loop and able to say the right things to the right people at the right time. Nick, do you want to say anything more? No?